Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Advanced Kayak Angler Podcast. Appreciate y'all tuning in wherever that's from. Just want to say, I didn't say it last week. Please, if you're going to be using any kayak catcher equipment, we all know they have the best, boards and a lot of tracks, Hobie equipment. They're just coming out with more and more stuff, bona fides, a lot of new, really innovative products. If you're going to be buying stuff from them anyways, use the code BKB5. And at the end of each quarter, so at the end of each 3 months, we're having a drawing for everybody who does a review on Apple. Has to be on Apple. Armando got on to me. I said Google reviews last time, but I'll check those as well. But go on to Apple Podcast, and if you leave a review that's at least somewhat positive, you'll go into a drawing, and at the end of each 3 months, we're going to do a giveaway for a catch product. So that's awesome. But if you're on there, use BKB5, save you 5%. You're going to buy that board or track anyways. You might as well get 5% off. Kurt, what's up, dude?
Oh, man, living the dream. How about you?
Yeah, just playing with new baits I was talking about before, new dangerous. I got the dangerous loaded ones, but the deep ones, I've had the shallow I've really liked. So, yeah, they stink, though. And it's funny because I was watching one of his videos and he was talking about how, trying to make one that doesn't smell real bad and all that. They're awful. Like he did, they failed on that part. It's a mechanism, though. It's like really fun to play, like
is
really
it small garlic. Is it like a scent for the finish, or is it just like a plastic smell?
Yeah, plastic smell.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's not awesome. I'm trying to think of what I can do, like brush some. I use bangs sometimes, so yeah, maybe I'll bang the hell out of it. I don't know.
Put a little bang on it. Never hurts.
Bang. All right, so we got two great pre-spawn anglers this week, and we wanted to talk about kind of as we're moving into a pre-spawn in a lot of parts of the country, we wanted to talk about pre-spawn baits and just kind of techniques and why and where you're going to use them. So let's go ahead and bring those guys on. From the West Coast, we got Mr. John Myers.
What's up, fellas, ladies?
And Matt Millard. Is it Millard or Millard?
It's actually Millard, but it seems like it depends on where you're from on how it's pronounced, but it's Millard.
Yeah. I grew up in South Mississippi and Louisiana, so it's Millard down there probably.
Yeah, AJ always said Millard too, and anytime he announced my name for anything, so I'm good either way.
Okay, cool. All right, well, appreciate y'all being on. Where are you from, Matt?
I'm in Northeast Tennessee, Tri-Cities area.
Gotcha. So what's your home lake? Dale Hollow, I guess?
No, I wish. I'm pretty fortunate. We've got probably four or five lakes, within 45 minutes or so. We've got South Holston, Cherokee, Douglas. Trying to think. Watauga is a good one. Yeah.
Cool.
Solid lakes.
Yeah, heck yeah. Well, we appreciate y'all being on. And so I guess we'll start out with John. You're the furthest away. We'll start with you. Give us one of your top five baits and how you use it for pre-spawn.
Okay. First of all, I appreciate you having me on, Dan, Kurt, and nice sir. Meeting Matt.
Nice meeting you.
KGB bait. It's a 9-inch. I use this instead of a rip bait. It's it really draws the fish up. And what I'll do is I'll find a cove. Okay. So the water temperature's got to be around 60. It has to be warming up and our days have to be getting a little bit longer. So for us, it's like anywhere from March and on. So, and the weather dictates everything. So anyways, I'll start on like a main lake point that leads into a spawning cove, and I'll throw that and I'll just burn down the bank and I'll just keep an eye open for fish that come up and follow it or look at it. And I just, okay, that's where they're at. And then also, this is a smaller version of the same bait. It's a 7-inch. Now this one, it really catches everything. It's a little bit smaller. So let's just say a little bit of weather came in. That would be the one I would probably use to catch fish after pre-fishing. But the big one I would use to actually locate the fish.
So John, can I interrupt you real quick? So you're using the big one just to locate the fish, not necessarily to hook the fish, but just to see the fish,
right,
and know he's there.
Right, okay. Right. And then, too, you know, when they start spawning, that's a great bait because, you know, you've watched the bass when they're guarding a nest and another bass comes up and they just come up and just click, they just smash right into them. So, I mean, that bait, the big bass will hit it, you know, especially if they're close to a nest or I'm around the nest with that bait. Yeah. So then let's just say as I'm working down in back of a creek, and it has rock. I see rock all the way in the back. That's probably for me. It's hard cover, meaning you know, wood or rock, even hard pan. But I really focus on the bigger rock. And then once I get all the way in the back, I throw that. It's called a bullworm. It's 8 inches long. It floats, and I throw it on a shaky head. Let's see if you can see that.
No wonder John wins all his tournaments with these big baits.
Yeah, he's on the big bait for sure.
Yeah.
This thing gets big bites. Big bites. It really does. It doesn't get a lot of bites, but it gets big bites. I've caught 7 and 8 pounders with it in tournaments, and it's pretty shocking. I throw it on 15-pound test on a jig rod, and I go all the way in the back. And it, our reservoirs are pretty deep. I do fish some of the shallower stuff, and if I get around bigger rock, that's in my hand, I'm throwing it, and I'll throw it right in the middle of the ditch and let it go to the bottom, and I just let it sit for a little bit, and the thing will stand up. Once it hits the ground, this thing, it just shoots straight up, and it has like a not a curl tail, but I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, kind of bulb tail.
Yeah. Yeah, and very buoyant. It's a KVD bullworm. Very effective bait for bigger fish. I've caught 3-pounders on it, you know, and 2-pounders as well. I'll use that when they're moved to the back, mostly. If I'm running down the bank, I throw the Stinko. This is the Nico rig. And then with this bait, so the way I have it hooked, I could just take this hook off, and then I put on a flick shake worm hook. Let's see. So it's a pretty big hook. This has a little weight on it. And what it does is you can work it kind of fast, and it will sink down, you know, and flutter down like that. Compared to the Nico rig, it actually, you know, obviously will work like this on the bottom. So
what size shaky head are you using for the bullworm? Does it depend on how, I mean, if you're fishing in the back of a creek.
Yeah, that's a great question. I like to throw the half. Sometimes I go to 3/4. And I want it to drop fast, and I want it to make a lot of disturbance on the bottom because it gets the fish's attention, you know. Most of the time it's a half or 3/4. Yeah. This one here I have on there, I think it's a 3/8. I just grabbed it from.
Yeah, that's the biggest shaky head I have, even for offshores, 3/8.
Yeah.
I've never thrown a half or bigger.
If you look at the hook, let's see, you can see that hook. Let's see, I'll put it this way. It's a big hook. So yeah. See my thumb? That's a huge hook. It really
EWG,
is.
EWG, huh?
Yeah, EWG.
It looks like a 3/0 or something.
Yeah, it's and it just screws on. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The weight goes almost back the shank there too. It looks
kind of like a sled head, I guess.
Yeah. And it's very weedless. I hook it so that the hook is a little bit exposed. I don't know if you can see that. But I leave the hook so because it's such a big fat piece of plastic. Mm-hmm. You got to like stick it in there a whole bunch of times, you know, get it nice and waddled out. And I'll put some fish attractant on it and make it kind of slippery. So it does fall through real easy. I'll fish that a lot of times on our reservoirs in 30 and 40 feet of water, which I don't know if you guys have real deep reservoirs, but ours get to like 500 feet, which is ridiculous. But wow. I've done really well.
Not that deep.
Yeah, I've done really well on points. early spawn with that bait. That and a jig. Let me show you. I got a, this is another, this is a little finesse jig. Let's see. Let me get it a little better. See how it has has those little tent in the front?
A ball head.
It's a ball head. Is that there we go.
The dirty jigs.
That's a Tasmua jig.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Tasmua. See how it has a little finesse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It looks like it's got some weight to it.
Yeah, it's a half ounce. I'll throw that, and then if I get around wood, I throw the wobblehead. Let's see. So that's a Yamamoto. That's the big cowboy. And then I actually, I don't know if you can see the head.
Yeah.
The head moves around. But that tentacle in the front. So my hula grubs, when the fish bite the legs off of it, I cut the front of the hula grub off and I put it on there as a jig.
I've never heard of anybody doing that on a swing head.
Yeah, I tell you, this thing around wood is deadly. Yeah.
What do you think it is about that particular bait around wood?
Well, the jig, I get it snagged up every cast. That wobble head, it goes right through it. It's almost like a Texas rig. Walks. And then I kind of swim it. Yeah, I think that's the key, is swimming it. Yeah. So, again, I've showed you five baits. But so I have showed you the bigger ones and the smaller ones. And is the weather dictates pretty much what I throw. And plus the fish's attitude, how they're wanting to bite. If they're real aggressive, I stay with the bigger baits. The smaller baits, I kind of like, slow down with those. And again, so this is a 3/4 ounce spinner bait. This is probably one of my favorite baits to throw. It's just a double wheel chrome blades. My buddy makes these up for me. And he's got this hook on there. I don't know if you can see that hook, but it's gigantic. It's like a 6-aught hook.
It's a gaff.
Yeah. That's really effective too, for those fish that are kind of hanging up tall. What I mean by tall is, so they get up on top of the brush, and I'll get that and I'll just burn it through the brush and kill it, or bang the brush and stuff like that. So our trees, we have trees that 200 feet of water, and they come up to the surface. You could be fishing in 200 feet of water. And these are the fish that I like first move up to the top. And by just bumping that bait or throwing that big glide bait, they show themselves. But the spinner bait usually gets them. And then, of course, the underspin, that's a 3.3. I'll throw that with a 1/4 ounce head. I actually throw that on an 8-pound test on a spinner rod. And I just, reel it real slow. So that's a, like, again, a bigger size and then more of a finesse size. And I kind of let the fish tell me what they want, and I'll have a rod rig with each one of these. And then I have it all hooked up. So that's a Carolina rig, basically.
Yeah.
So let me see that. So I have the piece of brass, or clacker in there and stuff with the tungsten. And I use a full size brush hog. And then this is what I call the California rig. So the California rig, let's see if I can show that to you. The California, that's a baby brush hog. And then I have brass and glass. Hear that?
Yeah, that's really loud. Yeah.
Yeah. So I throw that on 8-pound test. And it's, wow. I call that a California rig. And believe it or not, that's extremely wheely in brush. I believe Damon Tao, he went back east. Yeah. He didn't use with the bobber stopper. He actually used it with the barrel swivel. But I like the bobber stopper. And then, two, what's cool about the bobber stopper say, let's see, so I could move it all the way to my bait.
Oh, okay. Just so you can move it up and down, depending on.
Yeah, okay. I could put it 4 feet or right on the hook. I usually use 2 bobber stoppers, so when you cast it, it doesn't fling off. And again, that's a large bait and a small bait. I actually do better on the smaller one. And what I do is I'll get around patches of rock, big boulder rock and stuff like that, and scattered big rock. And I'll get that, and I'll just cast it out and just drag it. And I'll chartreuse the tail. I usually use a watermelon candy color or the cream pumpkin or the watermelon red flake in the spring is good around here. Sometimes I don't think it really matters what color. But
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask him, those deep reservoirs, like, are you dealing with pretty clean water there too?
Oh, I would imagine. Yeah. 20 feet of water is normal. You can see down 20 feet is normal. Yeah. Although when it rains, it is very clear. Yeah. It's like a pool. You can see your glide bait the whole way back, you know, unless it rains and it blows it out. But surprisingly, it actually clears up pretty fast. There's no aquatic weed growth whatsoever on these reservoirs. Let's say they're like after bays have some aquatic growth on it, like Tall Lake and a few other lakes that are below our bigger reservoirs. They use it like a holding pond and then they dump it. But yeah. But that glide bait. Okay.
Well, here, let's go over Matt's and then we'll go back and we'll talk about like how you're using it what you're focusing on.
And I kind of tell you, is pre-spawn seems to be pretty different depending on where you're from. And I didn't really kind of realize that until I started traveling, you know, a few years ago. Like here in East Tennessee, it seems like we stay in winter for a really long time. And then the water will creep up a couple degrees. And then before you know it, it's 60, 65, and we're dealing with spawning fish. But we have a lot of time where our water is from 45 to 55. And, you know, you go to Florida and you're dealing with, I mean, the water temperature never gets anywhere close to that. So you can't really go on water temperature on the pre-spawn deal. But for me, bait wise, if I could only pick one, it's going to be a jerk bait, you know, of some sort. I've got a plus one. Well, actually, that's the plus one, you know, mega bass. That's a regular, just 110. But that's probably the bait that gets the most work for me. And I can fish that, you know, from fall basically up until I feel like there's a bulk of the fish spawning. And, you know, I use a lot of, we have a lot of deeper lakes here too, similar to what he was saying, you know, 300 foot deep and clear water, not 20 foot of clarity, but you know, we can get 10 foot. And the jerkbait just has a ton of drawing power. And, I've caught fish, you know, Tennessee, Florida, Texas, wherever, you know, it's always in my starting lineup because it just catches them. You know, I don't know what it is. If you're not throwing a jerkbait much, that's probably one thing that you could learn, that you need to learn, because of just how long you can use it during the year and how good it is at producing bites. So that would probably be my number one in my pre-spawn baits, just because it covers such a long period of time, you know.
I think that's one of the most underrated baits that there is the jerkbait.
Yeah. I think with
last winter, that was my, like every year I pick a technique and this is going to be the year I'm going to learn technique. And it was jerkbait. And I can't even tell you how many times it saved me last year.
Yeah. And I've used it like, you know, Toledo Bend and the Hobie a couple years ago, I was fishing a shallow one in grass in some millfoil, you know, just down the ditches in the millfoil, and it was pulling fish out of that. You know, last year Seminole had a really good tournament and I was fishing it over 25 foot of water in standing timber, you know. And then here, like some of our lakes, we've got a lot of rock and that's where like the spawn's a little different here. Like if most lakes you hear are spawning bays and spawning coves and that sort of deal. Well, in East Tennessee, it's basically all rock and you get these cracks and crevices in the rock and the fish just, they'll spawn on the main lake. Like they just get down in between those rocks and they can spawn. So you don't get this big migration. It's like the fish go from being out deep and then they just kind of lift up in the water column and then just work in towards the bank. So just a few days, you know, before they're on a bed, they could be suspended over 15 foot of water. And that jerk bait is just, you're going to catch them. And the one thing I do that's a little different is if I'm fishing like open water, then even deep water, I'll use that shallow one, just the regular 110, because once again, you're dealing with a lot of drawing power. But if I'm fishing it up shallow around cover, I love that plus one. It's like that longer bill allows that thing to actually deflect a little bit. And you would be shocked at just how well it comes through wood. You know, I'm not saying you're never going to get hung up, but you can actually get it to come through and deflect off wood and rock and stuff pretty easily if you're trying to pick up around cover.
Brave with that big money bait, man.
Man, I wish I had a little bit better lighting, but this is a LG Bone and it is just demolished. That is probably one of the best clear water smallmouth colors that's ever been made. It's just got that chartreuse stripe on the bottom, but I mean, you're gonna lose some. I didn't realize these weren't something that everyone used until I started traveling once again. But in East Tennessee, we've got a bunch of people make these lead plug knockers. Now there's some commercial made ones too, but I mean, I can pretty much always get my jerkbait, crankbait, whatever back. I mean, it's very rarely do I ever lose one.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, do you change the hooks out on those?
I do. And it kind of depends on where I'm at and what I'm doing. Those Gamagatsu G Finesse are probably what I use the most around here. But I tell you, when I was at Seminole last year, you know, in that standing timber, it's kind of a crapshoot, you know, like if you hook one, they can get you wrapped around some timber pretty quick. And I went to some short shank EWGs, like I think I had some Gamagatsu and even used some owners, those ST35s where the bottoms are kicked out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And those weren't, you know, it might sink a little bit, but that tournament was in April. We're dealing with like post-spawn fish. That bait, I'm not letting it sit that long. You know, it's going quick. So I'm not super worried about it suspending evenly like I am in that cold water. But yeah, definitely switch the hooks out.
Keep going, man.
Keep going. You got five baits, man.
Well, I brought more than five just because it's, you know,
it's hard to get just five.
Yeah, I will say for me, like, you know, he had a shaky head worm and a Carolina rig. And, dude, for me, from like once we get through fall or into fall and winter and that pre-spawn up until the fish are spawning, I basically use no soft plastics, like unless it's a small swim bait, like a 2.8 Kytec or a jig trailer. Like I'm carrying no plastics through the pre-spawn because I just feel like if I'm going to drag something, it's going to be, we'll just go ahead and talk about that, but it's going to be a jig, you know, I can flip that if I need to, which I'm rarely doing, or drag it. But that if I need to drag something, it's going to be a jig and that works. This is a full size, trying to get this camera worked out here, but this is a full size dirty jigs, the pitching jig, you know, it's, I like that Archie style head just for doing a little bit of everything. You can drag it out deep. Yeah. I mean, it's just super versatile. Doesn't get hung up much at all. And then the downsize one I use a lot is that, missile mini flip. You know, I like that one. I've got some compact football heads too, but I don't use them as much. I just don't drag much in the pre-spawn. Like if I'm going to have to do something finessey, it's going to be that 2.8 Kytec on a 3/16 or a 1/4 ounce head. And you're going to catch everything that swims. I mean, I don't want to make it any more complicated than it has to be, but okay. This is the kind of more East Tennessee here or Ozark, any clear water. First of all, rock crawler or wiggle wart. I mean, basically from December through March here, this has to be in your starting lineup. You know, this one's gotten chewed on quite a bit, beat up, but that bait is so good. It runs, it covers that mid depth range really, really well. That's a winter bait, even into pre-spawn. These, I mean, you can even throw these in rock up as shallow as I'll bring them through 4, 5, 6 foot. You know, they just dig and deflect so good that you don't really have to worry about them getting hung up too much in rock. Now, and then you, when they go,
are you working those like trying to keep that grinding on the bottom the whole time?
Yeah, I want as much deflection and impact and havoc as possible. I mean, even if I'm cranking it in the dead of winter, I'm burning it a bunch, you know. And I'll try crawling it too, you know. But more times than not, it's that burn and stop that seems to do the best. So
what size line are you using?
I pretty much crank everything on 12 pound unless I'm going super, you know, big, super heavy cover or something. Yeah. 12 pound, there's not a real big difference in diameter from 12 to 10 for me, even on deep cranking stuff. So I'll deep crank with 12 and I'll do that mid range with 12 too. It's the best for me. It's the best like combination of strength and depth, you know.
Yeah, I've tried cranking, like finesse cranking with the 10, and I'm just scared the whole time.
Yeah, the only thing I have 10 pound line for is that I do jerk go 10 pound on that. Yeah, and I really think you could go to 12 and it'd be fine, but I just sometimes I'll throw like that plus one junior, and it just casts a little bit better on 10. And I haven't really had any issues with it. So 10 pound, that's the only thing it gets 10 pound is a jerk bait, or I'll use it for leaders on my spinning rod, but that's about it.
And which DT are you using? The 8 or the?
Yeah, this is the 6. This demon colored right here is like, if you're from East Tennessee and you fish Cherokee, and this thing got such a big name, really about the time it won the classic there, maybe it was at Randy Howell or I forget whoever it was, but it's just such a good, once you get past like the rock crawler where you're kind of more winter, you know, getting into the early pre-spawn, this thing will carry you, you know, you start getting some rain and dingy water, that DT6 is just a staple, like for shallow running crankbaits. To me, this is kind of what everything's judged on. And I just picked that color just because that's a, most of the time for me, it's going to be some kind of crawl bait, you know, around here. And I love cranking, but the last few years traveling, it's like going to these other lakes, I basically haven't cranked at all, you know, the last couple years. It just seems like we go somewhere and I'm always like trying to find grass or something. I just don't, the only crankbait I've cranked with, you know, any kind of regularity was that hybrid hunter on some of these grass places. But I'm looking to fish a little bit more here this year and get to, you know, start cranking a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't think we could have a Tennessee pre-spawn guy on not talk about cranking.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got flat sides and stuff too. I just, man, those two right there, that rock crawler for the mid depths, it works so good on any clear water reservoir. Even, you know, Ozarks is what kind of made the wiggle wart in that bait, which are kind of made after each other, so popular. And that stuff translates so well to East Tennessee. So, yeah, you got to have some crankbaits in there.
That's right.
All right. We're going to go one more. We're just going to. Yeah, we're going to keep it on the same train of thought. And this one is not so much. This is the lipless. These, I use these here, but traveling, this bait, these baits just get used so much more away from here because we have so many more banks and stuff. Like a lot of our stuff's steep. Like we've got a lot of 45 degree stuff. And like you can get some flats like towards the back of some of these pockets and then I'll throw them. But man, if you're traveling to, kind of down to your neck of the woods or any grass fishery in the pre-spawn, like you're throwing some sort of trap. Like you have to. Yeah. It comes through grass. You can rip it out of grass really well, cover water super easily. Like that's the staple. The couple I grabbed that Spro Aruka shad. Shad. Yeah. I love that size. That's the small. I want to say it's like the 55 or it's the 3/8 one. It's because they go 3/8, 5/8 or something like that. But that's a little smaller size right there. It just gets so many bites. That one's gotten chewed up quite a bit. I caught quite a few on some shell beds, even in Dardanelle there a couple years ago, and then in Florida last year. That thing was awesome. And then red-eye shad, the two-tap or some type of one-knocker. I kind of favor the louder rattle over the one-knocker, it seems like, but I throw them both.
Okay. That's always a big debate. I like whenever it's colder, it seems like for me in the fall, I like more of the loud rattle. And then in the spring pre-spawn, I'm usually more one knocker. I don't know why. I think it's like, to me, it sounds like a bigger fish. Who knows?
You can just fish for the silent ones.
No,
I haven't thrown any of the silent ones. No,
not of a
for me. Yeah. For me, I think if I'm fishing in grass, like, something like that, I want a loud one, like really loud. And then it seems like if I'm fishing it here, I'll pick that two tap more times than not because it's just kind of open water, flat type stuff. You know, I just have more confidence in it. I'll yo-yo it some too. If I fish it here more times than not, I'm yo-yoing it rather than, you know, stop and go or something like that. It just kind of depends on where you're at.
The Lay Lake Classic was won by KVD, like, 100 yards from my mother-in-law's house for like 1 year, all of 2009, I threw nothing but a lipless crank, but a red-eyed shad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good bait. I don't think it's as good for like a yo-yo type, you know, retrieve as it is just a stop and go, but it's a great bait. It's hard to beat. Let me see where we want to go next. I basically got them done. Let's see what we've done. We've done four. We're going to combine these next two because they're very similar.
Two, four.
Yeah. You can't set go without mentioning the chatterbait. I think you get immediate pre-spawn or grass. I like a spinnerbait. I'll actually throw a spinnerbait more probably early pre-spawn more than I will this, but once again, if you're fishing grass, I mean, you're going to be throwing this quite a bit when you get to those upper 50s kind of water temps for me. But the one that I really want to talk about more than this is just a swim jig. And I think when you get to the very end of the pre-spawn, especially when you're getting some fish up on beds, this thing is just so hard to beat because you can just run down a bank and keep this thing high, you know, Alabama shake type deal. And they just come out after it because they're kind of getting in that point where they're a little bit like defending the nest and defensive. So if nothing else, you can see them swipe at it and then you can have your follow up bait. Another thing is I think this is about the best possible practice bait for a tournament that there ever was because I've got a white one and a green one that I just have the hook cut off, like right here, because you're fishing it so high in the water column. Like I can pretty much tell everything that bites at it or takes it or whatever, because it's such a visual bite and it's a really, really effective thing, like in the pre-spawn, even into the post-spawn. But from that tail end of the pre-spawn into the post-spawn, a swim jig is something I fish a ton. And once again, grass, if you have grass, that's an awesome bait. That's probably one of my favorite baits to fish just because, once again, it's versatile. Like I can be going down the bank, reeling that thing or, you know, shaking it. And if I see a real juicy lay down, I could flip it in there. You know, it's just so – it's kind of multidimensional. You can kind of do a lot of stuff with it, and I really like it.
Yeah, that's my favorite bait. But I'm really surprised that both of y'all had, like – I don't think y'all didn't have any of the same baits. It's like last week we talked about rods and everybody has their own interpretation of what makes good rod. It's funny that we, you know, 12 pre-spawn baits and not one of them overlap jig, you know, but
yeah
but different.
You know, Dan, so everything that Matt talked about, if I was at Clear Lake, those would be the lures I would use. Seriously, yeah. A rip bait, chatter bait, the swim jig. But the rip bait, I mean, that really over the top of the grass, if you find a little patch of grass with the LV, we throw the LV 500 around here at Clear Lake, and it just dominates there. So
why does that lipless stand out on that lake?
Good question. It's the fish just can't stand it. You know, it gets their attention, and you get, you know, at Clear Lake, you could have a school of fish that could be a couple hundred fish in one school, and you get three of them looking at it. One of them's going to eat it. You know, it's just, that's just the way it goes. Same with the rip bait, you know. Everything I was showing was basically a clear water reservoir. But if I was talking about Clear Lake, Matt and I would have probably had a lot of the same baits. Yeah. You know, crankbait as well. You know, the rock crawler, you know, in red, you know. It's funny because when you started naming them off, I'm thinking, well, if I was at Clear Lake, that's what I'd be using. Yeah, for pre-spawn. And then also a A-rig and underspin, but a big underspin. Yeah. Yeah.
It's plus so situational.
Yes, it is. It depends on
the situational.
Yeah, where you're fishing. You know, if you're fishing a river, you know, all my baits would have been different. You know, I would have been throwing different baits. So, you know, a shallow water has grass. I'll be throwing what Matt has, but clear water reservoir, I would go with these stuff right here. Yeah.
What's your favorite, Kurt? Do you have any they didn't talk about?
You know, I'm a big Texas rig guy. So for me, coming up to the pre-spawn, you know, I'm looking for those ambush points or rest stops that the fish are going on their way to spawn. For me, so I'm constantly looking for those groupings of fish. So I like to do a lot of Texas rig when I find those guys, because they're usually, when I find those, they're usually in a ditch. They're usually in an old creek, in a swing in one of the old creek arms, and they're usually piled up. So I don't always and where I live, it's, the water's really muddy. So you kind of have to get those lures like right in the fish, you know, I feel like. Yeah. I don't have as much luck with like a chatterbait or moving baits in particular, except for like swim jigs. For whatever reason, swim jigs seem to work really well. But you know, I'm Southwest Ohio, very situational here. It's very, very muddy, very dirty water, mud bottoms a lot of times.
I almost didn't even grab the chatterbait. Like for me, if we're just talking about East Tennessee, like, that chatterbait doesn't come out until much later, you know, or for me, it doesn't come out till a good bit later, but
like after, you know, like after spawn later.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the spawn's different for us. Like we don't get this big, massive push. Like it seems like, especially maybe you can talk about this, Kurt, but like for here, we'll get a few fish come in and then a few fish come in and a few fish come in. Like it takes 2 months. Like, maybe 3 months. Like I've seen fish spawning in June, and I think it's because our weather's so much milder, you know, than it is like north of here or whatever. But it's different. But for me, I don't have a lot of confidence in that chatterbait until it gets into the 60s pretty good. You know, if you start getting to like 65, I feel pretty good about throwing it, but it's situational. Like if I'm fishing a lot of wood, I'm going to take the spinnerbait every time, but if I'm fishing grass or open water, I'm going to take the chatterbait, you know.
The only one I would add is that I am always the first person to throw a topwater. Like I just if there's a warming trend like this, this show's coming out after my tournament this weekend, there's a warming trend all this week. I don't know if the water hit 55, but if it's, I've got one tied on, I'm bringing my top water rod. If it's even close, because I know it's a warming trend all week, because I think the temperature is relative. It's not, you know, the temperature, it's 50 degrees, the water is 50. Well, there's like a warm 50 and a cold 50. Did it go from 55 to 50, or did it go from 45 to 50 in the fish earlier? Yeah. Ooh, I'm feeling good. It's warming up. If you can be that first person to throw a big topwater, like on a lake, it's the first time, like they haven't seen it all year. Yeah. If you're the first dumb guy out there throwing a big topwater on a warming trend pre-spawn, it can be like absolute magic. So
yeah, the best probably the best buzzbait day I've ever had was with water sub 60 degrees. Same deal what you're talking about. Like it warmed up quite a bit, you know, over the course of the week prior. And it was probably like 57, 58, but it had gotten there, you know, over the course of a few days. It was low 50s before and just caught a bunch of big ones. And I just done it just, I was like, man, it is warm. Like I just got that feeling. I was on the water. I was like, man, it feels a lot warmer than it is. Complete, you know, just happened to tie one on, just out fun fishing, man, just wrecked them. Caught a lot of big ones.
So I got to say something about our reservoirs, our deep reservoirs here. So the early spawn, we'll have these waves of fish come up, and the waves could be, I don't know, huge, huge waves. But you have to fish the really flat, flat, flat coves. And as the spawn goes on, you move further out where it gets a little steeper. And then here comes April. So you're actually now at like a 45 degree bank. You're not going all the way to the back anymore. You have to move, stay out. So our spawn will last. I've seen them spawn in October, believe it or not, on the Delta. But they'll start, this huge wave will move up. And usually that's when the big, big, big fish show up. And they won't go way in the back of the flat stuff. They'll actually move to the standing timber, and they'll warm up on the tips of them. So that's where that big glide bait comes in handy. You could actually get some of those to bite. But they'll move to like a cut, and the female will have, you know, 15 little buck bass over there. I'll make a nest and put some eggs on each one, then move back out overnight or within a day. But then, like I said, as the spawn goes on, the further out you have to go. It's really weird how this happens. And every year it's the same thing on our deep reservoirs. You have to start in the back and then just move out. So at Clear Lake, a shallow water with the grass, it's weird. They're in the mud. I don't know why they're in the mud. Okay. And this is usually like 4, 5, 6 feet of water at the most, 6 feet, but 2 to 5 feet. And they're in the mud, and they'll find one little patch of grass, and they'll have a huge school of fish in there, and you can catch 50 fish in a day on a rip bait. And then the next day, you cannot get bit. It just, they'll move. And then as that spawn goes on, another wave shows up, and another wave shows up, and another wave. And when I mean wave, I'm talking, it's insane the amount of fish in our reservoirs and at Clear Lake. There's so many fish in there. I've seen in areas where you look around, it's, you know how a 12 pack looks whenever you see the little bluegill on the brim spawning and you see them all in circles and stuff. Yeah. Well, I've gone at Clear Lake and walked out on this dock and looked around in less than 5 feet of water. And about every 10 feet, there was a bed with a fish on it, or a set of fish on it. And it was like within a football field, there is everywhere. And it's crazy how that works. But, you know, it only happens, you only see that every so often. Usually, like last year, the water rose up so quickly, it was pretty muddy. So you really didn't get to see it. But all that structure that grew up during the drought we had a drought for several years. We had all these willow trees and all these little brush grow up. And these willow trees were like 6-7 feet tall, and the bass were just all in there. And you literally couldn't get your boat to them. They were so far back in that stuff. It was insane. And then the grass really didn't grow for some reason. So Clear Lake was like a whole nother lake. And this next year, if you ever get a chance to go out there, this is the year you want to come out. Yeah. they're going to have a BSS open there June the 29th. And I recommend coming out and spend a week out there. You'll have a ball. Yeah. Yeah.
So Matt, I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. The average size fish is between 3 and 4 pounds.
Average.
That's average. Yeah. Yeah, get chatterbait, running the bank on a chatterbait. You're just going to get your arm pulled off. Yeah, it's crazy.
So Matt, if there was one, like if you were trying to tell somebody new to fishing in the pre-spawn, where's one place that you feel like you're going to go? You know, is there kind of one thing that you're specifically going to go look at first?
It kind of depends on what time of year we're talking about. Like if it's kind of on the early stages of that, I almost always favor, like if we're still in the part where we can really susceptible to some cold fronts and cold weather and that sort of deal. Like I find myself on the lower half of the lake somewhere more times than not. It's like that water's a little more stable, you know, like, so if you get a cold front, it's, you know, it's not going to dramatically affect it. You're not going to get blown out mud-wise. Like, everything's pretty stable. And I'll do that, and I'll fish a lot of main lake stuff up until I feel like they're getting pretty close. Main lake or front half of some of these, you know, creeks and spawning pockets and stuff. But, you know, if you've got a lake that's got some color to the water and you've had a warming front and you know the upper end of the lake's got some more color or some backs, some creeks, like I'm not afraid to go back there, you know, and check it out. But it seems like for me, I start outside and work in at that time of year. And then later in the year, I'll start inside and work out. It's kind of more or less.
I have a very similar perspective when I do pre-spawn to spawn, is I work from the deeper water and I start working my way back those creek channels to the shallower water, trying to find where they're hanging out. Very, very similar. Very similar.
Yeah. It took me, like what he was saying, as far as fish spawn in the back of pockets and then main lake, like when I was just fishing in East Tennessee before I started traveling, is I would like kind of lose touch with fish around spawn. Like it was hard for me to find them because they can spawn everywhere. Like if you ever come up here and go fish, like South Holston's got a bunch of smallmouth, they've got largemouth too, but the whole lake is habitat. Like you've got a bunch of 45 degree banks and rock. Like there's no dead water. And those fish, like you hear backs of the pockets. And some of those early ones do that. Like what he's saying, I think it's because you get those warm days and the shallower water just heats up faster. But it got really hard for me because they would spawn main lake. There was no rhyme or reason to it. And kind of now I've figured it out a little bit more, especially with the smallmouth. But it seems like for us here, those 45 degree, like shale, dark rock banks that's south facing, that those pockets that have a lot of that, those are kind of the first ones to go, it seems like, especially the smallmouth. And they'll bed, it's crazy. Like they'll bed, I don't know about for him, but I mean, I've seen them bed 10 foot deep and it's almost vertical and there's like a shelf there. Like that's the most obscure places. Like the odds of you going in and finding a pocket loaded is pretty rare. If you do, it's probably going to be largemouth and it's pretty rare.
Yeah, it sounds like the spots here, how they
get. Yeah.
Our spots and smallmouth do the same thing. They find one little edge on a steep bank and one little rock that sticks out and there's their bed right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I struggled with that big time. Because they would be doing it a little earlier than I felt like they would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they'll actually, you always think 60 degrees. Well, they're doing it before then, what you think.
For sure.
Especially the smallmouth. So it took me a little bit to kind of get clued in on that. And like South Holston is really well known for the spawn smallmouth bite. And like there used to be a little 4-inch Berkeley finesse worms. Like I forget what they got. It was just a power worm. They discontinued it. But we've got local bait makers making one that's called just the little green worm or the Soho worm or something along those lines. And it's just they're selling them by the thousands because everybody thinks that's like the only thing you catch a spawning smallmouth on or something. But they're just a little 4-inch green pumpkin worm, the most simple thing in the world. But people come from a pretty good ways around to go catch those fish when they're spawning because they're just easy to catch.
Yeah, real aggressive, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, John. Well, I know you got somewhere you have to be. Tell everybody where they can find you online and anybody that can shout out to anybody that makes fishing easier for you.
Okay, on Facebook, it's John Myers. Look me up. Ask to be a friend. I'll friend you. And then on Instagram, it's John Myers Fishing. And I appreciate being on, Dan and Kurt. And nice meeting you, Matt. And
what's your title sponsor? Power Clean.
So it was Super Clean. No longer is doing sponsorships. Yeah.
I always thought that was a cool sponsor, man.
Yeah, it was the greatest. They really took great care of me. You know, I still push their product. I believe in their product. It works really well. Yeah. And one thing before I go, springtime and post spawn and stuff, make sure you fish with the sun on your back and you'll catch more fish. You'll eliminate half the lake and you'll catch more fish.
Sun on your good back.
Tip. Right. Sun on there your back. You go. All right. Yes, sir.
All right, Matt. We'll hold right. you up, man.
All right, guys. Thank you. Have a great evening.
See
you. Yeah. Later. See you, Matt.
All right, man. How about you? Sorry, he had another podcast to get on.
That's all good.
He's a popular guy, you know.
Yeah, big demand, man. Those glide baits and stuff's pretty cool. We don't do that a ton in here. South Holston, I've mentioned it a few times, but you can catch some smallmouth up shallow like late April on the glide bait. That's pretty fun. But as far as places to follow me, Matt Millard, Facebook, Instagram, it's Matt Millard 510, I think, underscore BHOD. That's it. Reach out. Send me a friend request. I probably won't travel quite as much this year, but you'll probably see me out there somewhere.
Sounds good. Well, I appreciate y'all being on, and to John too. And we'll see y'all again next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for having us. See you, Kurt.